The first half is over and the second half is here, even though neither of them are actually halves. On this episode of Baseball Barbercast, we will preview the remainder of the MLB season through the lens of the trade deadline. And of course, the good, the bad, and the ugly. It's Baseball Barbercast on a Friday. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbercast, the only baseball podcast in the world that knows there's no deadline when you're trading Pokemon cards. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And you can give me your Charizard in late August if you'd like.
Yeah, there's a little bit more wiggle room, just like there used to be. It requires, you know, some kind of interesting weird loophole that you have to explain, right? Remember when Verlander got traded? It was like, wait, what? What exactly is going on? Yeah, if you're gonna move your shiny Gyarados, that's what's gonna have to happen. Good morning, Jake. It's good to see you. It is Friday. Our All-Star experience is behind us. It was a great time. It was hot. It was a lot of driving between Fort Worth and Arlington, but it was a lovely time. For those of you who listened to the show and said hi in Texas, we appreciate it, and we are excited to be back at our respective desks podcasting in a more normal setting.
I slept for 14 hours straight when I arrived home on Wednesday. Went from 7 to 9. That's untouchable.
That's impressive. I got home much later on Wednesday night. Did some errands yesterday, but I did work in a couple separate naps. That's how you know you're not working, is if you're napping multiple times in one day. That's how you're feeling good. But we're back at it. I am planning on being back at the ballpark this afternoon as the Padres are coming to Cleveland. And we got a second half to preview, or at least the second 46% to preview. And I'm excited. And we're going to talk about the trade deadline, which is coming up in, I guess, now less than 2 weeks. Yeah, less than 2 weeks. How about that? So that's exciting. And it's Friday. So the good, the bad, the ugly will be delivered. Don't you worry. Including some 2025 schedule discussion, which is not too much to discuss, but, you know, it feels like a notable thing on MLB.com headline. We should probably acknowledge. So we will do that as well. But Jake, before we get to all that, let's do it. Let's kind of review how we got here, and then look ahead at these next week and a half, and try to gauge which teams will be going in which directions here. Because so far we've had what, like one or two trades in July, if that.
Yeah. I just want to begin with the National League. Okay. If you're a fan of the American League, skip ahead. No, don't do that. Please
stick around
to every iota of the podcast. So when we entered the season in the National League, I would say there was a clear top three of the Dodgers, Braves, and Phillies. The NL Central was just a shrug emoji. And we felt pretty good that the Marlins, Rockies, Nationals would be bad, right? And that is kind of how things have played out. Now, the one difference is that the Phillies are the best team in baseball so far this year. The Braves lost Spencer Strider and Ronald Acuna Jr. The Dodgers have been dealing with a litany of injuries. And so our hierarchy is the Phillies, the Dodgers, and the Braves. And I would say that the one major surprise is that the Milwaukee Brewers, despite employing like one starting pitcher, are 55-42, pretty comfortably atop the National League Central by 4.5 games. Now, it's the smallest their lead has been in quite some time, with the Cardinals chasing them down. But I think the Brewers, I would classify them as the pleasant surprise of the first half.
Yeah, I think that's definitely fair. And while I don't think they've, you know, wrapped up the division, I think the run differential also tells us how much better they've played than everybody else, right? Plus 79 for Milwaukee. The Reds, who are actually in fourth, have the second best run differential in that division at plus 38. But the Cardinals have been our most, laugh in the face of run differential team this season, as they sit four games over 500 at a minus 38.
Which is karmic justice after the bizarre season they had a year ago. So before we hop into what all these teams need to do or not do at the trade deadline, I think it's important to explain where the standings are right now, right? So if we're going in the National League East, the Phillies are 8.5 up. Unless they fall apart and forget how to play baseball and forget the rules, I feel pretty confident that they will win that division. I think that the Braves and the Mets need to be considered in the wild card hunt. We'll get to that in a second. In the Central, like we said, the Brewers are up 4.5 over the Cardinals. I don't think this race is done by any means, especially with the Cardinals getting a couple important offensive pieces back from the injured list in Lars Nootbaar and very soon Tommy Edman. The Pirates are 6.5 back. I don't think they have the offensive firepower to chase the Brewers down. Reds and Cubs are a little bit too far away for my liking. And the NL West feels similarly done and dusted. The Dodgers are 7 games up at the Diamondbacks and the Padres. I have this whole theory that the Dodgers winning divisions by so many games is bad for them in the long run because they don't play an important game until like October 4th. But I need to kind of bake that idea a little bit more. Now, the wild card hunt is where things get messy. The Braves feel like a pretty strong bet to finish in the number one wild card spot. They're currently 4 games up on the Cardinals for that top spot. But from the Cardinals to the Cubs, okay, the Cardinals and the Cubs are 4 games apart. And in between them, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 teams within 4 games in the National League middle, which is absolutely ridiculous. This order really doesn't matter too much because 4 games is nothing with the amount of runway we have left, but I'll just go in the order. Cardinals, half game drop. Mets, 1 game drop. Diamondbacks, Padres, half game drop. Pirates, 1.5 game drop. Reds, Giants, half game drop. Cubs. So like all these teams are really bunched together. Which teams buy, which teams sell, which teams try and do a hybrid, who goes all in, I think is really going to determine which of these clubs makes the playoffs. Jordan, my question for you before we get into specific needs, of this middle muck, St. Louis, New York, Arizona, San Diego, Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, San Francisco, Chicago, who do you feel the most and least confident about right now on July 19th?
Most confident about it, and again, if we're tying it into the deadline conversation, and I think I'll get a good sense for that this weekend, but it's definitely still San Diego because that's the only team I feel confident is going 100% going to push forward. I think all of these other teams could tell themselves, now the Giants are in a weird spot because like they just spent all this money and in theory they are trying to get back to it. So I might put them second in terms of being aggressive trying to spend. Now you could say the Cubs too with the expectations, but with the contracts that they have, they might be more comfortable trying to reset and just think that we're not actually that good. But I still think that regardless of the deadline, I still think the Padres are the team. I know they finally fell out of a postseason spot, but they're the team, them and Arizona, I feel way better about than the Mets. I will just say that pretty clearly. I think the Mets are more likely to go backwards. I just think that it is going to be really tough, like if they are sitting in a postseason spot, but still 3-4 behind St. Louis or 6-7 behind Atlanta, would they really go backwards in that spot? Because that point right there is something that we've kind of all been wondering about, not just about the Mets, but about this new wild card setting in general, right? Is the third wild card enough to entice teams to push forward or at least not sell? Or will we ever see a situation where a team is in basically this exact scenario that the Mets are in, that they would actually be willing to go backwards or at the very least just hold and not, you know, try and trade away prospects for to move forward?
Let's actually start with the Mets. I think they're both the most and least interesting team in this group. David Stearns, their new president of baseball operations, was at the helm of the Milwaukee Brewers in 2022 when they traded away Josh Hader. Right. And I think that that trade is held up very often as an example of what not to do at the deadline because it kind of blew up the clubhouse and that team kind of skidded in the second half. Whether he learns for that or whether that's his MO and he believes in the process, I think will really be indicative because I think it's harder to do a sell when you're the GM of the Mets and you're in a playoff spot than you are when you're the GM of the Brewers in a playoff spot. What do the Mets need, though? I mean, it's literally anybody who can pick up a baseball and throw it in the direction of home plate from the pitcher's mound. Their starting rotation has done admirably considering the talent that they have there. The bullpen really needs some reinforcements if they're going to contend. Let's actually stay in this little area here, Jordan. The other two teams that are in the wild card spots right now, the Braves and the Cardinals. I think the Braves conversation is pretty straightforward. This is literally 2021, right? They've had enough injuries to the outfield with Acuna and Michael Harris. going down, that they just need outfield help. They specifically need a left-handed hitting outfielder to kind of complement Adam Duvall. I'm very curious as to who that's going to be. Like, Jazz doesn't feel like an obvious fit there. It'll be interesting to see what they go for.
Yeah, I mean, again, there's not a ton of hitters we're like super amped about on this trade market, which is what is going to make this so interesting, as do those guys end up going for a lot more. I think, I mean, more on the pitching side, right? We were surprised at how expensive Hunter Harvey was. Now, that's generally guys with multiple years at any position. Yeah. You're going to end up getting more, but I do agree that Atlanta's in a spot where, I mean, I still look at the pitching too, and I'm like, man, we're still an injury or two away from this being a little dicey. But I do think that offensively, even though they seem to be picking it up before the break, and they still, in theory, their top five should still be extremely good. I do agree with you.
It's as simple as Kelenic has been fine. Adam Duvall has been abysmal. And Eddie Rosario is not something that you can rely upon. To me, a trade for Jesse Winker feels like the most obvious thing in the world. Left-handed hitting outfield bat who you can platoon with Adam Duvall. Now, the problem I understand is Winker's not a great defensive outfielder, but it's the deadline and you have to, you know, you got to compromise somewhere. That feels like a perfect fit for the Braves. They could also maybe use another bench infielder, if we're being real.
Right. I would say, or they go super aggressive and you know, call up the Rays for Randy. But the thing about that is, again, like, in theory, it's like, well, Atlanta doesn't have enough to trade for Randy or all any of these other guys. But man, they've found ways to make deals like that. So we'll see.
And I think Atlanta is actually a good place to just talk about this. Here are the outfielders, because Atlanta needs outfielders. Jesse Winker, Randy Arozarena, Lane Thomas on the Nationals. He has another year of control next year. Tommy Pham would be a one-year rental. Kevin Pillar, who has been bizarrely unbelievable for the Angels, but can you really trust that? He is definitely going to get dealt if the Angels are intelligent at all. Jazz Chisholm Jr. is someone that someone that the Marlins are definitely going to try and move. I'd be curious to see if the Athletics try and trade Miguel Andujar. Taylor Ward.
Oh, I think they definitely will. Yeah, or Rooker, right?
Yeah. Or Rooker. Taylor. The problem with Rooker is his defense is not very good. Taylor Ward for the Angels, and I would say those are all the major outfielders.
Mark Canha is another one. I mean, he has not been – he was really good for the first couple months and has struggled lately, and he's, you know, 35. So maybe some teams think he's kind of cooked, but that would be another one I would look at.
I would say now is a good opportunity to shoehorn the Phillies into this conversation, because what they need is Steve Pearce, okay? Mm-hmm. And 2018, Dave Dombrowski makes the move for Steve Pearce when he's running the Red Sox. And that guy wins them the World Series. Now, obviously, that's not that simple. But they need someone that they can platoon Brandon Marsh with in the outfield. Because when they play the Braves, inevitably, in the playoffs, and the Braves are throwing Max Fried and Chris Sale out there, Brandon Marsh is a guy who has not started against a lefty for like a couple of months, right? And Mark Canha, who hits lefties very well, is a right-handed hitting outfielder, feels like a natural fit for the Phillies. I also think the Phillies should go out and get one more reliever just to supplement that bullpen. I think as far as starting pitching goes, they'll probably stick with what they have in-house. So that's the Phillies, the Braves, the Mets. Let's talk about the Nationals and the Marlins very quickly. Both of these teams should sell. The Marlins are going to try and trade anything they possibly can. That's going to be Josh Bell. That's going to be Tanner Scott, who is probably the best reliever available. He's an impending free agent. He's going to get them a real prospect or two back. He'll be highly sought after. And then Jazz is a very interesting conversation, just because do teams think they can shoehorn him into second base in the infield? Probably, but it's like that guy hasn't played in the infield since 2021. So it's just odd conversation.
I wouldn't be that. Like, that would be less of my concern with Jazz. I have to imagine that defensively, I mean, there will be some defensive questions, but remember, it was already kind of aggressive that they even moved him to center. A team like the Mariners, if they were going to go after him, would they try to push him into the infield, or would they have him learn a corner outfield spot? Like, that's a concern, but really it's more of, do you know what you're getting offensively? And do you know that your team wants to hang out with Jazz Chisholm for the next year and a half, right? We love Jazz. We have been Jazz supporters for a long time. We understand that there's obviously been moments in his Miami tenure that have not made him the most beloved person in the clubhouse. But like generally, I think that he's someone that, especially in this market where there are so few impact players available, and the Marlins are going to be so aggressively trying to move him in a way that if you're looking for super duper upside, if you're trying to go after Luis Robert, that's going to cost you an absolute fortune. Just as the macro picture about the Marlins that I'm fascinated by, how quickly they were willing to jump on trading Arise, which, by the way, maybe ended up being smart regardless of the, you know, the return. You know, Arise has certainly struggled over the last month or so. I know he's been injured. But will Miami at this point, will Peter Bendix at this point jump at a great offer tomorrow, or is he going to take this down to the deadline knowing that everybody knows he's going to deal multiple players? And so is he willing to take this down to the end now, or will he jump at the first great offer that he gets for Scott, for a Jazz?
Quickly on the Nats, they're definitely going to sell. Weaker's gone. Dylan Floro's gone. They'll try and trade Trevor Williams. The main question is, do they try and trade the guys with multiple years of control left? All right, that's going to be Lane Thomas in the outfield and Kyle Finnegan in the bullpen, who was an all-star, and I didn't know he was an all-star until I walked into the National League clubhouse and saw Kyle Finnegan. So congrats to Kyle Finnegan. That's the NL East. Let's go to the Central and talk about the Cardinals. Let's talk about the Brewers first. This one's very simple. Anybody who throws a baseball, like the Mets, their starting pitching is really shoddy. That they have won 55 games so far this year with this group is incredibly impressive. They will suck wins out of nowhere, out of every nook and cranny. I don't think they're going to go get Scooble or Crochet, but I would not be surprised to see them add a starting pitcher at the deadline.
Yeah, I mean, I will say we do definitely need to give some credit to Colin Ray, who we knew was going to be a part of this rotation. You know, he's leading the team in innings. But man, Tobias Myers, man, this dude's got a 3-1-3 in 13 starts in 72 innings. Now, again, are they ecstatic to hand Tobias Myers the ball for a postseason game? Probably not. But I will say that, like, that's at least a third starter that is going to help them get through the second half of the season. That's three, though, and that's including Colin Ray. So, and the Bryce Wilson has kind of bounced back and forth. It doesn't seem like they really want him starting regularly. So you're absolutely right. They have a ton. I think they've already released Dallas Keuchel, so he got four starts from him. So they have to be going after some guys. And this is really, we'll talk about Cleveland. You know, Cleveland went out and signed Matt Boyd coming off Tommy John because they think he can help their rotation. I would expect Milwaukee to be trying any kind of version of that. And then Savali, right? That's the other main one. They just traded for Savali. So that's clearly someone that they believe in. That, you know, he, you know, looked pretty solid in his first two starts with them. So that's the other starter for them that we can keep an eye on. But I totally agree. You have to imagine they're going to be going after another one.
Cardinals in second place right now. They also need probably one more arm. The interesting thing with the Cardinals on the offensive side is that Edmund's going to be back soon. And they just got Lars Nootbaar back. And their biggest issue is in the outfield, right? In center, it's been Dylan Carlson and Michael Ciani. And that's been one of the worst, you know, the worst center field production in like the league, in the whole league, right? So whether they try and upgrade on the offensive side of the ball will be interesting to see. They could probably use one more bench bat, maybe. I don't know if they'll trade for it. What I like about the Cardinals, right, they have all these moving pieces, like Edmund and Brendan Donovan can move around and do a lot of different things. I don't think they'll add on the offensive side, but they definitely need a starting pitcher. Anything on them, or else I'm going to speed on to Cincinnati.
Well, I would just mention, I don't know what the plan for Jordan Walker is, and I don't know what the likelihood that Lars Nootbaar could play center field regularly, but that would be another kind of move that they could make if they do finally feel like Jordan Walker can help their offense and they're tired of getting a, you know, 500 OPS from center field. That would be another thing to keep an eye on there. But man, once again with the Cardinals, Alec Burleson. What a find. He has been so big for that offense. And now that Wilson Contreras is back, this lineup is finally starting to look like the best version that I was kind of picking when I picked them to win the division.
Sorry to the Pittsburgh Pirates, who are actually the team we should talk about next, because they're above the Reds and the Cardinals in the standings right now. You know about Paul Skenes and how good their pitching has been, but that has hid in some ways just how terrible offense
is. Yeah, not above the Cardinals. They're not above the
Cubs.
They are
above the Reds.
Reds and the Cubs. They are above the Reds and the Cubs, yes.
Yeah. So this is just offense. They will not trade for a starting pitcher. Maybe they could use a reliever. I think their biggest area of weakness is center field. The Michael Taylor, Jack Sawinski platoon is just not fun to look at often. Rowdy has turned things around, but this offense, more than anything else, just needs a consistent bopper in the middle of the order. And whether that's someone who plays an outfield corner, whether that's someone who I guess is, there's just not an obvious.
I mean, listen, they have guys to trade. If they,
Luis
if
Robert they, is like the perfect
or
fit,
Randy, right?
Or Randy. I think,
yeah.
Right.
It would require a level of aggression that we haven't quite seen yet from them. But like, if they want to package some of their super young pitchers and they just added a whole bunch more talent in the draft on the offensive side of the younger and, you know, certainly high school level, but they have a ton of pitchers that I guarantee you they could deal. Not Jared Jones, not any of the guys at the top. I'm talking, you know, double A and below. If they really want to put some of those together and trade for a Randy Arozarena, I bet they could, but it would, you know, that would be a very aggressive maneuver at this stage there. I would commend it. As much as I love a lot of those pitchers, it would be nice to see Pittsburgh actually make an aggressive maneuver. The problem is they're operating right within the box of we're not spending any money. And so Ben Cherington has to decide when to make that aggressive maneuver to acquire some impact talent, because it's not coming to free agency.
And that's why I think they should go trade for Luis Robert, because that's not a player that's easy to find.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I understand he's hurt a lot. I get that. But it is, to me, it is a risk worth taking for that specific guy.
And that's a much more, again, Mariners fans talk about trade for Luis Robert. Like, trade for Luis Robert, so much of the value is like he's also one of the best defensive center fielders. And like, you already have that in Julio. So, not that Luis Robert wouldn't make the Mariners better, but like, this center field is such an obvious hole for Pittsburgh that would be solved that way, that I agree. I think that they are a team that would make some sense there. Now, which of those teams or which team beyond them is more equipped to trade for Robert? That's a different discussion, but it's, yeah, we'll see. I mean, I think they are sort of close to the Nationals in the sense that, and I could be totally wrong about this, that it's like, with what you've had come up with Skeens, with Jones, like with some of the younger players, like you're already feeling pretty good and you are kind of looking forward to the next year anyway, that I feel like even if they stay hold steady, that people are feeling pretty good, almost kind of like the Reds last year too. But I don't know. You also view it as, listen, you have the opportunity to make the postseason. You got to go for it when you're the Pirates.
And the thing with, okay, so who's the starting center fielder for the 2025 Pittsburgh Pirates, right? It's, they don't have like a top prospect in center field in AAA waiting to come up, right?
Yeah,
whatever
really.
That player next year is probably going to be from outside the organization. It's like, be like a Kevin Kiermaier flyer or something, right? So like, go get Robert or go get Randy and give that a shot. Two more teams in this division, the Reds. The Reds are really confusing. They just have so many injured hitters and I don't know when they're coming back. You have a better sense of this than me. Do they need to make a trade for one more bat in the outfield?
I don't know. I mean, Marte is now back and in the mix. He's, you know, back from suspension. McClain does not seem like he is going to be back anytime soon. But I don't know if Friedel or Fairchild, maybe more so. But Friedel, I'm not 100% sure. Obviously, again, I'm not around them all the time anymore. But that's another team where, you know, last year they really stayed put. They just traded for Sam Maul and called it a day.
And that ended up being the difference. They missed the postseason by like two games.
No, yeah, to be fair, Sam Maul was amazing, but like they did not get the help that they needed. They did not push in aggressively enough to really get it. Because yeah, they really were right there at the very, very, very end. They were still
mathematically
alive on the last weekend of the season. It didn't really feel like it because there was all those other NL teams we were talking about. But yeah, no, they're another team that offensively could certainly use some help, but they're with Pittsburgh where I just don't know what I would argue they have less to deal from. That level of farm system is not as strong right now.
And then the Cubs, with a very hot finish to the first half, have clawed their way back into it. They're now 3.5 back. I think with Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, and Chicago, they'll stand pat for the next 2 weeks until as long as they possibly can before the deadline, to see where they're at, whether they should sell, sit, or buy. I think the Cubs need relief help big time. And then they need anybody who bangs. Like, they just need one more dude who freaking rakes. And then their catching situation has been so bad. Like, Miguel Amaya is just not it. And I understand that trading for catchers in the middle of the season is really complicated. This is the one team where I think they could use a little bit of help, whether that's like Danny Jansen, like take a flyer on him.
Yeah.
From Toronto.
Danny Jansen. I was thinking about him. That's like a real starting catcher that I think a lot of teams would like to have. And yeah, I mean, they're already scrambling to bring in Tomas Nito in the middle of the season. Like, that kind of tells you all that you need to know. And, you know, God bless Moises Ballesteros, but doesn't feel like he's going to be the answer behind the plate, at least not this year. So, that's one. But the Cubs might find themselves in a situation where it's like, listen, it's not working. We gotta trade Bellinger, or we gotta trade right Bellinger. It's the other one that I'm watching closely. I don't know. That's a tough contract to trade, I would imagine, with those being player options. That seems pretty difficult. But I have to imagine they might try. Yeah,
Bellinger is a $27.5 million player option for next year and for 2026. He has not played well enough where you could imagine him opting out of that. And so if you trade for him, you're taking a risk that if he gets hurt or he stinks, then you're kind of stuck with him for that amount of money for the next 2 years. Certain teams just won't trade for that because they're not willing to take that risk. The other guys that they could trade, Jorge Lopez is going to be a free agent at the end of the year. And then Hector Neris has a $9 million team option at the end of this year. If they do try and sell, it's not that sexy, but he's not the worst pitcher in a lot of bullpens right now.
No, I agree with that. I was just going to say that it's like, all right, so you could either try to patch up the bullpen and make him run the third wild card, or you could make your terrible bullpen even worse, and that's a great way to tank.
Yeah, it's the best way to tank.
Yeah, is to really. But it's just, God, they're just in such a bad spot with these contracts. It's just not an obvious thing to deal, right? Like trading Hap with 3 years left, trading Tyon with 3 years left. Like, ugh. They are the team that I would be in the most uncomfortable situation, because Toronto at this point, it feels like the fans are like, screw this, blow this up. This is a joke. This is an embarrassment. Like, we need to clean house. This has failed, right? Whereas the Cubs, it's like, oh man, like really? Like we were really gonna, like not that they had these core people. I don't know. That one I just feel really, really, I do not feel good about. No matter what direction they go in, I am not gonna feel good. Whereas the Blue Jays, it feels like they're at least starting to accept reality.
A team in a similar position to the Cubs is the Giants, where it's like they have spent enough money and made enough of a commitment to this season that completely blowing it up right now just doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. San Francisco is 3 games back in the wild card, even though they are 3 games under 500, which, again, still just so freaking funny. They paid for Snell and Matt Chapman over the winter. What do they need? I think, like, Barry Bonds?
No, it'd be awesome. Yeah, I mean, who else do they pay for? Jung-Hoo Lee, who was off to a nice start and then had a season-ending injury, right? So that was a tough bounce. Obviously, what's happened with Snell, and he looked awesome, you know, right before he's kind of... We could have an awesome Snell second half. Like, that's not impossible to fathom either, but they're also in a situation where, all right, what would you really be dealing away? I think they don't have a choice. I think they just have to push forward and hope they start playing better. They've just have too much invested in this group.
They finally pulled the plug on Nick Ahmed, and they are going with a Tyler Fitzgerald, Brett Wisely platoon at shortstop. Tyro Estrada at second base has been really underwhelming this season, which is unfortunate because he's a fun player. That might be a place they try and upgrade. But the lineup, really, like Soler, Lamont, Wade, Ramos, who's been amazing, Bailey, Conforto, Chapman, Yastrzemski. Again, it's a lot of 50 players. It's a lot of like average big leaguers. Boy, this team could use Shohei Ohtani, but they don't suck, right? And so if they can find a way to kind of upgrade,
like honestly, the talent here and like when the bullpen's cooking, like I don't think this team's that much worse than some of these other ones. Like I know the minus 27 run differential says otherwise, but I don't know. I think they're more likely to push forward than the Cubs are.
Yeah,
I don't know how you feel about that.
I think I agree with you. I think that's definitely. Yeah. The right read. Let's stay in the NL West before we take a break. Dodgers are atop this division. They don't need to sweat in that regard, but at this point, they're planning for October. And the big issue for them has been injuries, specifically pitcher injuries. Kershaw looks like he's going to be back pretty soon, which is going to help them. The Glasnow injury doesn't seem to be too serious. That is encouraging. However, Yamamoto, Buehler, and May... May is done for the year with whatever happened to his esophagus. Buehler is just like working out at Cressy at a private facility, which is confusing. Bobby Miller is in AAA. And Yamamoto is not eligible to return until, I believe, mid-August because he's been on the 60-day DL.
Just got moved to the 60-day. Yeah.
Right. So,
by the way, can we also just say, Someone else has pointed this out. The fact that James Paxton has been the healthiest Dodger is really
unbelievable. Congrats to him.
I'm happy for him. Happy for James Paxton. I still don't think they would like him starting a postseason game. But like at this point, you know, we talked about him as like, all right, well, they're going to help him get, he's going to help get them through the regular season. Well, that's now more true than ever because my God, do they just need someone out to go out there and throw five innings, no matter how good or bad they are. And he's at least done that. And his ERA is, you know, 4.38 and 84 innings and God bless him. You know, Gavin Stone and Landon Knack have both been really solid. I think that we were wondering which of those would actually get the opportunity to pitch, but I mean, that's the real question here is, are they actually still going to pursue starting pitching, even though in theory they have all these guys that will be there in the second half?
Yes. They're going to get some sort of bulk starter who can munch up innings, not necessarily someone who is going to start a postseason game. Aaron Civale would have, you know, like that type of
thing. Right.
You know? So, and then on the offensive side, this is a stat from an article at The Athletic that Fabian Ardaia wrote. Dodger hitters not named Betts, Otani, Freeman, Will Smith, Hernandez, Muncy's been hurt, have combined to hit 218, 288, 336 combined for an 80 WRC plus. The bottom of this lineup has just been horrible. Muncy does not look like he's going to come back anytime soon. You could probably squint and say, not even squint, this team probably needs another outfield bat. Whether they're aggressive and they go for Randy or Luis Robert, I don't know. Maybe Jazz seems like an interesting fit there. They need one more outfield bopper that they can feel comfortable with. The issue they're going to have, right, is it's got to be someone who can play the outfield because Otani is going to DH every day, as he freaking should. Staying in this division, the Padres, they, I think, could use one more bench bat. Their bench is about, you know, the weakest in the league as far as contenders are concerned. I think they need one more reliever and one more starting pitcher. I don't think they need any starters who can start a playoff game for them. However, GM AJ Preller could just trade for Garrett Crochet before this podcast is over.
Yeah, I mean, the other starters we haven't really mentioned yet, maybe this will come up with the AL, but besides Crochet, and I really don't think Scooble's getting traded, and I'm still not even really convinced Crochet's going to get traded, but we'll see. Flaherty, right? I mean, Flaherty's the one at the top of the rental starters list. Eric Fetty sort of falls into that category too, although he's more of like guy that, of course, bulk guy versus guy you want starting game one, but maybe some teams view him as such. I feel like Fetty's just like a way better version of Civale. Littell and Eflin from the Rays are ones that I would certainly keep an eye on for the Dodgers, but I just wanted to mention some of those. And then the Rockies, who knows? Like, Cal Quantrill's been awesome, but I'm sure the Rockies now think he's, you know, the greatest pitcher in franchise history, so I don't know if they're going to want to trade him.
The Rockies are North Korea. They don't trade. Maybe sometimes they do. It's like, it's impossible to predict what they're going to do. We just have no idea. Arizona, last team here, I think they're pretty good. They've been really banging the ball over the last month or so. They need more bullpen help. Their bullpen's rough, but remember, like, they're going to get whatever the hell Jordan Montgomery is back soon. And then Eduardo Rodriguez, who they paid a lot of money for still in the offseason, still hasn't pitched. He's expected back sometime soon. Between those two, Merrill Kelly, Zach Gallant, and Brandon Pfaadt, Kelly, I think, is set to come back soon. He's been hurt. That's a legit five, right? Yeah, even if you don't know what you're getting from Rodriguez and Montgomery, like, that's a legit starting rotation. I think if this team solidifies their bullpen, they could easily get back into the postseason.
Yeah, I agree. Shouts out Yulber Diaz, looking good in his spot start. I would just say too, like, that's nice. First of all, Montgomery's been like downright horrific, so it's not even just like, oh, what are we getting? Hopefully you're getting back, but like, yeah, Erod's the one that could certainly swing it in a much more positive direction. But I still look at this bullpen that they barely changed. You know, thank goodness for Justin Martinez, who it's like, where was this guy last year? I mean, he's one of the hardest throwers in baseball. He's been absolutely nasty. 23-year-old throwing 100. But Sewald certainly had his struggles. Ginkle up and down, looked a little bit better lately. But I agree with you. I think the way that this offense is hitting, I think they're also likely to push forward. I just don't know what pieces that they have. So of this NL mix here.
Yeah, give me your prediction. What do you think? Yeah, how do you think this ends up?
I think Cardinals Padres. I feel pretty good about Cardinals Padres.
Ready for a little spice?
Yeah.
I don't know if I believe this, but I'm certainly going to say it. Cardinals chase down the Brewers.
First time.
That's for sure. Cardinals chase the Brewers down in the division.
Ooh.
And all go.
I'd be right. A Cardinals division pick survives.
I know.
Woohoo.
I'll go Braves. Ooh. I'll go Braves, Brewers, Diamondbacks.
Okay.
I think is where I'm at. Although the pot, like, I, the problem is I believe in one team too many. Like, I believe in the Padres. There's not room for them there. Sorry, boys.
I'm just going to take a quick gander at strength of schedule. Okay, so just throwing it out there, the Padres and Giants appear to have a much easier schedule than any of these other teams the rest of the way. So
raise Giants, a banner.
Yeah, again, is that going to be enough for them to get to play, you know, the White Sox and Marlins and Rockies seven more times? I guess we'll find out. It's all close right, enough. But yeah, I think Cardinals and Padres are my picks.
Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll do the American League a little bit faster than we did the National League. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. We just did the National League because we love our nation. Let's do the American League because we love America, even though I guess it's the same thing.
Hey, let me just say,
yeah,
no giant flag in Texas. One of the biggest shocks of the week. Giant flag, one of my favorite parts of any All-Star game or World Series. And when you have that large of a stadium and that large of a state and that large of a everything's bigger in Texas, I could not believe we did not have a giant flag, and that was by far the biggest disappointment of All-Star Week. Anyway, let's keep our patriotism alive here with the American League. Jake, where would you like to begin?
I would like to begin on the East Coast because we are elite East Coasters. East Coast bias, baby.
I'm North Coast. North Coast elite. Just to clarify that, please. Different kind of coastal.
You are from the East Coast.
I know.
It's in your blood,
but
baby.
Now my North Coast bias is showing. So we're going to start in the American League Central. No, just kidding. Tell me about the East, the AL East that everyone talks about.
Baltimore Orioles are leading the division right now by a game after their miraculous victory over the New York Yankees on the final day of the first half. Boy, oh boy, was that something else. I got to go rewatch those highlights when we're done recording. Here's the deal with the Orioles, right? Corbin Burnes is a free agent at the end of the season. They spent good prospect capital to get him. Not supplementing this team right now would be a disservice to themselves because they spent to get Burnes, right? They've already put money into the pot, and I think they need to keep going. What that looks like is an open question. The obvious place to add here is pitching. I would be shocked if they trade for anything resembling a hitter. Anybody who owns a baseball bat should not be acquired by the Baltimore Orioles, right? Mm-hmm. They need help in the starting rotation. They lost John Means for the whole season. They lost Kyle Bradish for the whole season. They lost Tyler Wells, another starter, for the whole season. I think their rotation needs some help. Will they spend to get Crochet or Skubal? I'm kind of skeptical. I think in some ways, Skubal makes more sense for them than Crochet does, because Crochet, the issue there is that he is going to probably be on some sort of innings limit for the remainder of the season, or you have to have some skepticism about how much he's going to throw because he's already surpassed his career high workload, right? Whereas for Skubal, like, you're trading for a straight up front line dude with fewer doubts. Now, I remain skeptical that Skubal will get traded. The Orioles are a team that could blow the Tigers away with a package if they believe that Skubal is the right guy to go all in for. Besides him, they're not going to trade for Jack Flaherty because they did that last year and it didn't go very well.
Yeah. They're like the one team we could certainly rule out for that. Yeah.
Now, the two guys that I'm interested in for the Orioles are Nathan Eovaldi and Zach Eflin. Eovaldi, I believe, has a vesting option for next season. I think he is the type of arm that's like he was amazing in the postseason last year, right? The Orioles could start him in a game two or a game three and feel pretty good about that. I think he and Eflin are players that they will focus on if they decide not to go and get Skubal Crochet. anything below the Eovaldi Eflin range, I think is a disappointment and is a disservice to their roster. Anything on the Orioles, or can I speed on to the Yankees?
I mean, I think Fetty's probably right at that line. Yep, that would be interesting. He would certainly be helpful. Obviously, he doesn't have the postseason resume, but I think in terms of what he's shown this season, I'm sure he could help them. But yeah, I think everything you said about the Orioles of Baltimore is accurate. Who do you want to talk about next?
The New York Yankees, who have two hitters and sometimes Ben Rice. That is where they need to upgrade. They need a bat. Now, in a weird way, the complete and total blahness of their offense gives them some flexibility because they could upgrade at a lot of different places because their offense has been bad in a lot of different places. Now, still, they are just a game back in the division. Despite all of their underwhelming play, the Yankees are in the mix. And so I think they need to go for it. Remember, everything I just said about the Orioles and Corbin Burnes kind of applies to the Yankees and Juan Soto, right? Mm-hmm. They went out and spread all this stuff to go get Soto. He's been unbelievable for them. You hope that he's going to sign there long term. You don't know that. They owe it to themselves to compete as long as Soto is around. In my mind, this is the team that needs to go get an outfielder. Which sounds very silly because they have Juan Soto and Aaron Judge. I understand Giancarlo is going to come back and it's going to complicate things, but Trent Grisham and Alex Verdugo have just both been so underwhelming.
See, to me, man, I'm way more concerned about LeMahieu and whatever's happening in the infield. I know Ben Rice is not covered up. First of all, no matter what they do, they're going to end up with a very expensive bench and or IL. Are we expecting Rizzo back this season?
Expected back and like, should be playing is
I'm
different.
Just like, I'm looking at him. I'm looking at Giancarlo. I'm looking at LeMahieu. I'm looking at Glaber, who's also in his last year, right? And it's like, they are going to have a very difficult conversation with one of the people making a lot of money and saying, hey, dude, either you're not playing anymore, which is fine. Again, that's what they should be doing because you need to improve your team. But I don't think it's definitely the outfield, I guess is what I'm saying. Like, I just think that,
okay. I'm going to push back. I agree that the bigger need is the infield. Who the heck is available?
Paredes, if the Rays.
They're not trading him. He has so much team control left.
Okay. All right.
Like, I understand. We'll I think someone wrote that. I think Heyman or Joel Sherman wrote that. I'm skeptical. The Rays have a lot of guys that they should be trading.
Right. Rendifo is the other one, I would say. I feel like, perfect in that sense.
Brandon Lau makes more sense to me for them as a left-handed bat in that stadium.
Sure.
That I could see. I just don't think I kind of want to crumble up. Like, Paredes is under team control till the end of 27. Like, that's just not something the Rays are going to do with an all-star player, in my opinion. Again, who knows?
Okay. Who knows? But Brandon Rogers, Jazz in the infield.
But that's the thing.
No, it's not this easy. I don't feel good about any of these hitters that are available. Like, that's the thing. Like, that's just the nature of the whole market. I mean, that's like, this is why you do not want to be having to look for offense. And if you're the Yankees, like Brent Rooker, I mean, again, if you want to put him on the outfield, that would probably make your team better, but it would also make your defense something. So that's just the market. Sure.
One more name. Gio Urshela, the home run knocking fella. Could he? Not really. He's been pretty meh for the Tigers, but he is a infielder. And
they'd be happy to have him back, I'm sure.
I'm sure they would. All right, enough of the Yankees.
Sorry.
Enough of the Yankees. The Red Sox are the other team that plays the Yankees all the time. The Red Sox need a right-handed bat. That's kind of been their big bugaboo recently. Remember, they are going to get Tristan Casas at some point. He's a lefty. They lost Trevor Story for the year, and Vaughn Grissom is just not good.
But it's not happening right now.
So for the Red Sox, it's a right-handed bat and middle infield help. Which, again, as I just said, is just not something that is very available on the market. Luis Rengifo also very much fits them. He's a switch hitter. The Yankees-Red Sox bidding war for Luis Rengifo is something to really keep your eye on.
Hey, just where Perry wants him. They really need a right-hand hitter. I mean, O'Neill. The right-handed hitters that they have regularly playing right now are O'Neill, Connor Wong, who's obviously been good, and then Rafaela, who, I mean, again, he hasn't been horrible, but like he's certainly not a hitter you're afraid of by any stretch when you're facing them. And then the bench, Rami Gonzalez, Jamie Westbrook, Rob Refsnyder. Like, listen, this is, I think this Red Sox team is pretty good. And once they get Cassis back, if they can have a right-handed hitter, now we really are talking about a very, very, very good lineup. But I just don't know who that is exactly.
Rengifo feels like a good fit. I also think they could use one more starter. I know that their starting rotation has been amazing this year. Injuries to...
It's been less amazing in July.
Yeah. Whitlock, yeah. Losing Whitlock, I know it was a while ago, has kind of been tough to replace. They are currently going with Hauk, Pivetta, Brian Bayo, Cutter Crawford, Cooper Criswell. Crawford and Criswell, I think I just would like one more arm. I know Cutter Crawford's been great, but I think he missed some time with injury, right?
Yeah, no, Crawford's been fine. Crawford hasn't missed any time. I know Pivetta has missed some time, and Criswell's kind
Pivetta,
of been,
right.
been up and down. Pivetta's the one that was injured. But yeah, I don't know. I agree that, I mean, Bayo is such an X factor for them. Like, that was the guy, right? Opening day starter. And he's got a 5.3 ERA. Like, that's someone that I just, clearly he's not going anywhere, but that's just someone that has to be better in the second half if they, like, definitely want to feel good about a postseason spot.
Potential fit for them. All five of those starters are right-handed. Trevor Rogers of the Marlins feels like someone who could get moved. Yeah. Throws with the incorrect hand. Might be a fit for the Red Sox. Two more teams here. The Tampa Bay Rays are a very important character in this year's deadline. Yeah. The Rays are only 5.5 back in the American League, right? But this organization is smart or cynical enough to know that they're probably not good enough to win the World Series and probably not even good enough to make the playoffs. And if the Rays have any doubts, they are going to sell, 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 sell. And they have enough talent that who Tampa decides to deal and when will be a determining factor for the deadline as a whole. So who are those players? I already mentioned Brandon Lau. We already mentioned Randy. Pete Fairbanks has only one more year of control after this year. Yandy Diaz only has one more year of control after this year with a club option for 26 that I imagine they're just going to hang on to him because he's only making 8 this year, 10 next year, and 12 the following. So yeah, don't expect Yandy to get traded. Zach Eflin is set to make $18 million next year before becoming a free agent. He's definitely someone who could get traded. Zach Littell is a free agent in 2026. Randy has another year, so Randy, it's 24, 25, 26, then free agency. So the Rays are going to pull the plug. They're going to trade a lot of these guys. I'm fascinated to see where everyone goes.
Yeah, I feel pretty good about that. The thing with Paredes, the only reason I keep mentioning him is like they are going to have to clear the runway for Caminero and Carson Williams at some point. And that's going to happen. Like, Caminero has, again, it's amazing we haven't seen him play yet this season. And I hope that we do get to see him in the second half, one way or the other. But that's just, I just feel like that there is another wave that is already almost in Tampa. And I think if Paredes is one of the best hitters available, if he is the best hitter available, if Robert is not getting traded, then I wouldn't put it past him. But I hear what you're saying. That is definitely, obviously, 3 more years is a long time for sure.
Toronto, they should trade everything because they stink. Yeah. Toronto, what a disappointment. 9.5 games back of the wild card right now as it stands. The whole thing with them, right, is do they trade, extend, Vlad, Bo? Do they trade both? Do they extend both? Do they trade one and extend the other?
I think that this is so difficult because I would guess if Bo Bichette did not have a 596 OPS, they would happily trade him and try to extend Vlad. But
if Bo Bichette didn't have a 596 OPS, then wouldn't it be 9.5 games back?
They might be 7.5 games back. like obviously, if Bo was much better, yes, but he is not the only reason they are in this position. It is clearly just a flawed roster, and it is just not happening for them. I would still be really surprised if they trade Vlad. And I would think they would try to trade Bo, but it's just like, I just have no clue what his trade value is. Like, in theory, this is not a situation like, again, this sounds extreme, right? But it's not like a Tim Anderson thing where it's like, holy crap, he's been so bad and he's going to leave. Like, you could still trade for Bo knowing that even if it doesn't get all the way corrected this year, you do have him for another season and there is an all-star in there. So I have to imagine there is still some significant trade value there, but he's the one that is by far the most difficult to figure out from a trade value standpoint. And I think they're going to try. I think at the very least, all the guys that are, you know, free agents, Justin Turner, Kikuchi, Kiermaier, you know, some of the bullpen guys, maybe Danny Jansen, Trevor Richards, all those guys have to be available. And hopefully they can start to rejuvenate what is not a good farm system and then try again next year with Vlad and Bo one more time. But that would be my expectation for what happens. But I still think Bo could definitely be on the move. Vlad, I would be surprised.
Chris Bassett is another interesting player here. He is under contract for $22 million for this season and for next season. Since May 22nd, that's 10 starts, his last 10 starts. He has a 2.29 ERA and a 2.89 FIP. This is still a player that you can start in a postseason game. I think we've kind of forgotten about it. He had such a horrible start to the season and has been pitching on an irrelevant team. Bassett is someone who I think if a team, like if the Jays are willing to eat a little bit of that money, I could see a team going out and getting a player like that. All right, that's the American League East. Let's move to the American League Central. Cleveland is atop the AL Central. The North Coast bias is strong. They have been one of the most delightful surprises of the season so far. They are only 4.5 games up over the Twins as it currently stands, but they have one of the best records in the league. Jordan, you're now around this team regularly. I think it is pretty obvious that they need starting pitching. My other question is, what is going on at shortstop, and do you think they could upgrade anywhere on the offense?
I would just say that the parallels with them in Milwaukee are extremely strong. They're both 4.5 up. They've both been way better than we expected. They both have a bullpen, have a starting rotation that is kind of patched together into a pretty extreme degree. And they both have offenses that are way better than we thought, right? Now, I think that, and they have, right, Yelich for the Brewers, Ramirez for Cleveland. I think you could say Cleveland's offense ceiling is even higher than Milwaukee, but I think it's pretty close. With the way that Kwan and Naylor have been playing. Shortstop, I don't know. Like, they bring up, they just have so many of these guys that can play multiple positions, whether it's Schneeman, whether it's Rocchio and Freeman, who certainly bounced around in the outfield. And now they're bringing in Noel to bring in some offense. I have to think that they're still focused on having enough innings to kind of get through this season and figuring out who would start a postseason game for them. Gavin Williams just came back from injury. He has not looked awesome yet, but again, it's really early. That's a guy that the best version of him, you're certainly excited to give him the ball in the postseason. But right now, you just don't know, right? They said they sent down Logan Allen. They sent down Tristan McKenzie. He's trying to figure his stuff out. Bybee's been good, but not amazing. Lively has saved their ass in a really big way, right? Lively's essentially been their version of Colin Ray or Tobias Myers. There's just so many parallels here, but I do think that they're in a stronger position because their bullpen is absolutely one of the best in the league, if not the best in the league. They have even more reason to be pushing because they do have a team that is built to win in October if they can fix the few holes that they have.
And the Twins, who are 4.5 games behind them, they have had a very interesting season. I think they really just need one more starter and then some bullpen help. I'm not sure they feel comfortable with Chris Paddock or Bailey Ober starting a postseason game right now. Pablo Lopez has just been such a disappointment this season after an incredible 2023. I would bet on him to turn it around. I mean, he has a 5.11 ERA and a 3.84 FIP. So he hasn't really been as bad as the surface level numbers show.
Yeah, it's just but been still homers. That,
yeah.
I think homers have been bad for him, but that's really the main issue.
I think he'll figure some things out. The bullpen's been really good. They could still use one more guy in there. But the offense is not really something that I would expect them to upgrade too much. They just have so many guys who've been hurt and missing so much time. We're going to see someone with the Twins will say, our deadline acquisition is getting Royce Lewis back, right? And then we'll all laugh and be like, yep, I guess it is. moving down this division, I think the Royals kind of present a more interesting conversation. They've been a nice surprise this year. They're 7 back in the division, and I believe 2 back in the wild card right now as it stands. They need an outfielder really badly. MJ Melendez has been so disappointing and just recently went on the injured list. Hunter Renfroe has actually been outstanding for the last, you know, month or so. But they just need, right now they're playing Adam Frazier in left, Kyle Isbell in center, Hunter Renfroe in right, with some Nick Lofton, Garrett Hampson, Dyron Blanco mixed in. They just need another bat.
Yeah, and again, as we've already said, not a ton of them out there. How aggressive would they be? They were aggressive to get Hunter Harvey, man. So maybe that tells us that they're willing to spend some more prospect capital to get another guy that we don't even necessarily view as like a massive upgrade, but clearly something that they need. So that tells me that they're clearly, you know, in it to win it, trying to get back into the postseason. And so I would expect them to continue to add. Like I do not think are going to sit around and do nothing.
This feels like a potential Brent Rooker landing spot. Whether the Royals have enough in the farm system to deal away is TBD, but there are very few contending teams with wide open DH spots. Yeah. I know that they've been giving Freddie Fermin some run at DH because his bat has been nice and they're catching Salvador Perez every day, obviously. But this is a team that has a little bit of room to just straight up add a hitter. I think the Royals are going to be aggressive. I think they think this team is good. I think anytime you have Bobby Witt Jr. cooking like this, it's worth going for it a little bit. And they're not getting, you know, the Seth Lugo season again, right? So I think you got to go for it. I know they were kind of shaky to finish the first half, but this bullpen getting Hunter Harvey, I think that'll help them. Finishing up this division with the Tigers and the White Sox, the Tigers are another one of those key kind of fulcrum teams. If they decide to sell, how much they decide to sell will really kind of dictate this deadline. Skubal's the obvious one. I'm really skeptical they're going to trade him. And that's just because, look, he is, I think, the AL Cy Young favorite right now, if you look at betting market gobbledygook. And the Tigers have to think they'll be good in 2025. And Skubal is under contract in 2025. And he makes them better then. Now, if someone blows them away with an offer, you might have to take it. But I just am very skeptical that he moves. I am not skeptical about Jack Flaherty, Andrew Chafin, Shelby Miller getting dealt.
Yep. I think it is that simple. And I just, trading Skubal, I mean, I've argued that trading Crochet would be insulting to the White Sox fans, even if they would understand it a little bit more. I think trading Skubal would really be, with the direction that they've at least seemed to project that they are going. I know this year has been disappointing, and I think we were skeptical that they were going to be that good this year, but I just don't think they can do that. I would be really surprised.
Speaking of Crochet, let's talk about the Chicago White Sox briefly. If you play for the White Sox and any team wants you at all, you will be on a new team, unless your name is Luis Robert Jr., probably. I don't think Luis Robert.
I don't think so either. But I mean, yeah, who's the safest? Who does not have to worry about?
Here's who does not have to worry. Here's who does not have to boot up, like, you know, Zillow or whatever.
There's literally one name.
That is Andrew Benintendi, because his contract is so bulky. He is averaging, I believe, $15 million a year of AAV and is a free agent after 27, and he stinks. And so no team wants that at all. Tommy Pham, you're traded. Paul DeJong,
Kopech,
you're traded.
See ya.
Kopech, thanks Fetty for your service.
See ya.
And that's fine. I mean, this is about as simple of a sell anything if it's decent as it gets. Fascinated to see if they deal Moncada or Eloy, if any team wants whatever point.
So this is the other one where them and the Marlins are going to be the most aggressive, you know, offloaders. And the sequence of those deals will be very, very interesting as to when they each try and you know, dump these guys.
All right. AL West, as it currently stands, the Seattle Mariners are somehow, some way, one game up. They are one game up in the AL West over the Houston Astros. They were 10 games up in June.
I think that was in July. Is that possible?
Big freaking nice.
They've been No, that was not July. They were 10 games up in June 18th. They were 10 games up. They have been in first place since May 11th.
So they've coughed up 9 games in a month.
That's right. It's been a good time. Really fun watching them play like crap. Yeah, here's the deal. They obviously need offense. They're very aware of that. This is another team where they are not just going, they're not just going to sit there, folks. We know that for sure. Are they able to pull off something absolutely massive? I doubt it, but they, with where their farm system now is, with which includes a lot of young players, young hitters that people want, they have the pieces to do it. Which ones they're actually willing to part with, which ones teams actually want, we will see. I think they will try something. They will try something big. And whether it works or not, we're going to find out. But I don't think they're just going to sit around and wait for stuff to get better.
The Houston Astros, who are trying to chase down those underwhelming Seattle Mariners, who I think probably, unfortunately, sadly, Jordan will chase down the Seattle Mariners at this point. I mean, they're running back.
Even if they're like, it's, yeah, they're right there. So
what do they need?
I mean,
they
right now the playoff odds are like still 50-50 for the division. Yeah. But yeah,
don't feel that way. I'll tell you that. The Astros have not gotten a lot of production at first base. John Singleton is doing his damnedest. I saw some Vlad Jr. Astros rumors. I would be very skeptical of that happening. It does feel more likely now. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was just gonna say, if any team's going to call and try something wild to get Vlad Jr., hell yeah, it's them. Like, truly. They basically traded for Bryce Harper. And then Nats ownership was like, no, never mind. Like, they'll do it.
This current Astros group that is being led by their owner and Jeff Bagwell and Craig Biggio and Dana Brown sometimes, right? Like, that group, I imagine, is going to be more aggressive than the group three years ago that was led by James Click.
I mean, right? listen. Crane's been in charge the whole time, right? So, yes. How different is it going to be, really? But I do agree with you.
They also probably need one more starter. But on the offensive side, to me, it's like Brent Rooker, maybe. It's Josh Bell if they want to upgrade on the low end at first base. Maybe one more outfield bat. Right now, they're doing Myers, Loperfido, and Chas McCormick out there, with some Trey Cabbage and some Mauricio Dubon. They're going to get Kyle Tucker back at some point. That's going to obviously be a huge help for them. He was just so good in the first half. But yeah, the Astros, they'll make a trade to upgrade their team, and then they'll chase down the Mariners, and that's really it. The Rangers are a much more interesting proposition because I think that they should sell. It's a tough spin after winning the World Series and then immediately just selling off at the deadline. They have a lot of talent. They've dealt with a lot of injuries. Josh Young, Evan Carter still in the IL. Jacob DeGrom expected back sometime. Dame Dunning and Tyler Molly still in the IL as well. But they have a lot of impending free agents that they could deal and get a lot of interesting stuff back.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know what, Scherzer had some quote that was like, don't even ask me about the trade deadline. Like, we're going to win here. I'm like, all right, dude. Well,
they're currently they're five back in the division, and they are, I believe, five back in the wild card?
More than that.
Seven and a half in the wild card.
Yeah. I mean, the guys we're talking about, right? Heaney, Yates, Lorenzen, Leclerc. I guess Leclerc's injured. So they definitely do have a lot that they could deal. And, you could say they're like, if they don't, how mad are the fans going to be? You just won the World Series. You're fine. You could view that both ways. Maybe they'd say, no, we do have to go for it. Maybe they could say, nah, we're not that good. So they are definitely an X factor to watch just because of how many guys they could move if they decide to go in the other direction.
The opposite of an X factor is the Angels, always, forever, and in eternity. They're in just a bizarre spot because the general manager, Perry Minasian, is on the hot seat. And so then what do you do? If you're a bad team with a GM who might not be there next year, do you sell for a future you're not going to be a part of? I don't know. The impending free agents they have are Matt Moore, Brandon Drury, Carlos Estevez, who I think will get dealt. He's going to throw important innings in the postseason. That guy's good. Team's very interested. And then Kevin Pillar is like the other interesting one. Just he's been so good as a veteran.
And
he won't be this good.
Who we mentioned. Yeah.
Yes, but he has one more year.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. And then, right, Taylor Ward's been in a lot of trade rumors too, even though he's got two more years of control. But you know, they ain't fooling anyone at this point. They will try to trade more guys. There's I think Perry, that is still, I guess, the job description. So I think he will do that.
The A's, who are going to be in Sacramento next year. That's weird and sad. Mason Miller is not getting traded. Let's just say that right now. He's not a free agent until after 2029, when we'll all be dead anyway.
Like, trade, you know, relief contracts or years of team control for relievers don't mean anything to me anyway, because they're different every year. So I don't, really matter. Mr. Miller's amazing. I'm just like, why do I know what he's going to be next year, let alone next month? Like, I just do not. Telling me how many years of team control a reliever has means nothing to me. I think there's a 5% chance he could get dealt, but I think that I would not be focused on that because they're going to have so much else that they're trying to move, whether it's Andujar, you know, whether it is Rooker, who, again, he's under team control for 3 more years after this, but they have to be trying to chip, you know, Stripling, Wood, all these other guys, I think, are absolutely gone. And that's probably how it should be. So there you go.
All right. That's it. We did it. 10 points to Gryffindor. That's the trade deadline. If you have any other trade deadline questions or thoughts, email us baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. Jordan, let's speed run the good, the bad, la ugla, if you don't mind.
Let's do it and say have a good weekend to everybody. Let's begin. Something good, something bad, something ugly from the week. I will begin with something good. Actually, you go first. You can go first.
Okay. Sure. Dodgers Cubs are going to be playing in Japan next year. This was heavily rumored, and we got it confirmed over the week, and it's great. Like, we had this series in Korea. That was very cool. But now we're going to have Ohtani, Yamamoto, Imanaga, Seiya Suzuki playing in Japan. It's going to be unbelievable. You want to go? Let's go. We should go. It'll be good.
Yeah. Probably should start planning that now if we're going to do that. The Dodgers are the first team ever to be opening internationally in consecutive years. This is something that fans don't really care. Oh, boohoo, you have to travel, blah, blah, blah. That's totally fair. It's a valid response. It is also like a very real thing that the Dodgers have been talking about all season and will probably continue to talk about as they continue to send Shohei Ohtani all over the globe over the remainder of his contract. It's just part of it, right? I mean, it is not an easy way to start a season, but it is obviously something that is good for the game and something that we will all be very much looking forward to.
Shohei Ohtani playing a Major League Baseball game in Japan is simple to understand. Jordan, what's good for you?
Jacob Wilson is coming up for the Oakland A's, and my spin on this being good is how good. I am so perplexed by Jacob Wilson. What he has done, the first round pick last year by the Oakland A's out of Grand Canyon University, son of former big league infielder Jack Wilson. His numbers are so ridiculous that this is why I'm saying how good, because I don't think Jacob Wilson is going to hit 400 in the major leagues.
No.
But, you know, he sure is going to try. And what he has done since he got into professional baseball, his minor league line is literally 401, 445, 613 in over 300 plate appearances. He does not walk ever. He does not strike out ever. He's like hitting for fake power. His average exit velocity is 84, which would be bottom five in the big leagues. Like, he does not hit the ball hard at all, but it's just working. Whatever crazy approach he has taken to hitting the baseball, it is absolutely working. And of course, he can play shortstop. So that is a nice combination. It is wild that he has gotten to this point. And he's clearly good enough to get to the big leagues this quickly. But how good is Jacob Wilson? We are going to find out.
Bad. Rivalry week. We got this from MLB. We got the big schedule drop for next year. Some teams doing fun schedule drops. I just don't. Like, the schedule drop for MLB is just less than, it's harder for me to get, you know, amped up about it. They announced this thing called Rivalry Week, which, you know, good try. But if you're doing a Rivalry Week and the Red Sox aren't playing the Yankees, I'm just not buying it. It was a lot more Red Sox playing the Braves, Yankees playing the Mets, I believe.
It's mostly interleague.
It's a lot more locality.
Yes. Yeah. They're basically trying to lean into the interleague reality that we now live in, where it's happening all the time. I think that that's smart in some ways, but it also just feels goofy for that to be the rivalry week, where you're missing out on a lot of like actual interdivision rivalries where fans actually care. And so while geographically it's nice to kind of lean into some of these that we don't normally think of, and some of them are more obvious, like Mets, Yankees, and Angels, Dodgers, for the most part, like, I don't think people care about this nearly as much. So it's fine.
Yeah,
I agree. It is
go ahead.
Bordering on bad. My bad is the A's playing in not Oakland next year. Now, that's obvious. We already talked about that. Their schedule came out, and you're like, oh, well, that's interesting. I wonder who and when they're going to play these teams in Sacramento. Well, we don't know that, because there are clearly a lot of logistical issues still in play here regarding how they're going to play in Sacramento. Most notably, it is the climate that is now a concern, because the turf that they have installed that they will have in Sacramento will be a little bit toasty during those day games in a way that is not the case in other big league ballparks. And player safety is very much a concern at this point. So they have not announced the game times yet for these contests, because they are going to be trying to not be playing games when the sun is up, which is kind of important for a 162 game Major League Baseball season involving travel and whatnot. That is why oftentimes you have day games, it's getaway day games and whatnot. But if it is 100 plus degrees and you're on turf, that's not exactly going to be a fun experience for anybody involved, and not exactly a big league experience. That is for sure. So a lot to be still figured out with the Sacramento situation. Of course, I'm excited for the people of Sacramento that got to have Major League Baseball. But other than that, yikes, yikes. This is going to be, this could remain bad moving forward.
My ugly is Lyle Miller-Green, who was drafted, I believe, right in the 17th round by the Chicago White Sox out of Austin Peay. He is a 6'6 hitter. But the reason he is notable is that he was born in Siberia. He was adopted by an American family, born under the name Oleg Sergeyevich Kornev, and his path from Siberia to the MLB draft is absolutely fascinating. Anthony Kastrovitz wrote a great article about this over at MLB.com. I highly recommend reading it.
Yeah, multiple schools, a lot of home runs, very interesting player, and excited to see him join a White Sox system that already has some recent college baseball legends like Tim Elko. My ugla is also draft related. Now, some people may have seen the headline that both Manny Ramirez and David Ortiz's sons were both drafted at the end of day three yesterday. That was D'Angelo Ortiz, David Ortiz's son, who was playing junior college baseball in Florida, and Lucas Ramirez, who is still in high school, was drafted by the Angels in round 17. So the first thing about them that I just want to like say is, again, obviously it's cool, although with the shorter draft, we don't normally see these as often. Like, we're not often seeing a whole lot of favor draft, nepotism drafts. Listen, nepotism is very much alive in baseball, but because the draft is shorter, we are not often seeing picks spent on these things. However, it is worth noting that while the Red Sox did select D'Angelo Ortiz, who seems to have been okay in junior college this year, Lucas Ramirez is much more of a legitimate prospect who was like a top 50 player in Florida, was committed to Tennessee. So I think that's someone, I think he already got like $100,000 from the Angels. So that's, I think I would just say, looking forward, much more of a legitimate one. But my actual ugla is the fact that 5 years ago, the Kansas City Royals drafted Jonah DePoto, the son of Jerry DePoto. And this year, in the 20th round, the Mariners selected Ryan Piccolo, J.J. Piccolo's son, from the Kansas City Royals general manager. Now, Ryan Piccolo, Jonah DePoto, by the way, got traded to the Phillies and is now in AAA and is probably going to be a big leaguer at some point. But it is funny that in some weird ways, the Mariners returned the favor. Now, Ryan Piccolo had a great season at St. Joseph's, so he's not a total nobody either. I'm sure he'll, you know, stick around as an org guy. But it is funny to me that these two GMs managed to pick each other's sons 5 years apart. So that is my ugly.
That is cool. That's cool. All right. Enough podcast. No more. Thank you to Andrew Hartz for producing. Thank you to you, Jordan Schusterman, for podcasting with me yet again. We hope you enjoyed this delightful trade deadline preview. If you think we missed anything, email us. BaseballBarbercast@gmail.com. I think we're going to do a little mailbag episode next week.
Trades are coming. I think we will have some news next week. But everyone have a wonderful weekend. Thank you all for listening. baseballbarbercast@gmail.com, and we'll talk to you on Monday. Goodbye.